This is the KPTZ Compass, your local news magazine for the Northeast Olympic Peninsula. This week on the Compass, the annual all-county picnic takes on a very different look while still emphasizing emergency preparedness. And then, a Jefferson County UFO expert critiques the federal government's new report on unidentified aerial phenomena. And now, we go inside the Compass. The 9th annual All-County Picnic looks a lot different this year, but it still focuses on emergency preparedness and neighbors helping neighbors right here in Jefferson County. It's happening right now as I speak, if you're listening on Saturday or Sunday, August 21st or 22nd. Instead of an actual picnic at H.J. Carroll Park in Chimicum, the event this year consists of three distinct activities. It began with online digital presentations of personal stories of resilience, Tuesdays and Thursdays all month. Then for Saturday, August 21st, in-person training was scheduled at various community points of distributions, or CPODs. Those normally are sites where the public can pick up life-sustaining emergency relief supplies following a disaster. Volunteers are training at CPOD sites in Brennan, Quilcene, Chimicum, Gardner, Port Ludlow, and Port Townsend. The third branch of the weekend event consists of neighborhoods throughout Jefferson County holding self-organized events, a sort of all-county picnic in place, if you will. Social, neighborhood gatherings focused on building relationships, networking, and preparedness protocols. Whether you're able to participate in any of these events or not, we thought you might benefit from some reminders about emergency preparedness from Willie Bentz, Director of the Jefferson County Department of Emergency Management.
How can this EOC best achieve its goals in keeping the community informed and prepared for the worst?
Mm-hmm. So there's a group called MPREP that's actually affiliated with Local 2020, a local nonprofit.
MPREP as in emergency prep?
Yes, sir. Okay. And they work to go out into the neighborhoods and build awareness around emergency preparedness and then bring in individuals from those neighborhoods to start volunteering to take on roles during an emergency. And so what we do is we provide support and training for these neighborhood preparedness groups. One way that we do that is through, you know, programmatic development. Like there's a program called DART, Disaster Air Response Teams, that we're currently helping develop, where we're providing training to volunteers in these communities on how if they needed to either evacuate someone who has a medical problem during a major emergency, that we train them on how to transport that patient onto an aircraft coming into their community, as well as unload food and supplies and other essential goods and then distribute it to their community. So again, providing that information, those sort of skills and those trainings, and then providing them a lifeline. When the neighborhoods do need something or have information to report, they're able to connect up with our local amateur radio operators, who then are our lifeline into the EOC, so we can kind of develop a two-way information throw between those community members on the ground and then the EOC and the professional first responders here.
A lot of the neighborhood communities around here are well prepared, some less so than others. But what I've noticed in my time being with the KPTZ emergency response team is that Maristone Island, of all, because they're isolated in the sense they could be cut off with that little land bridge that they have, they've done a really good job of networking among themselves and figuring out ways to be strong and survive in those situations. Obviously, as you nod, you're familiar with it. Are there things that other communities, other neighborhoods can learn from what Maristone's doing?
Absolutely. Routine drills and trainings. I believe it's every Wednesday, and I was actually listening to it just yesterday. Their amateur radio operators test their radio equipment, readiness checks to ensure that everything's functional and they can communicate in case of a disaster. I always say that, and it's kind of cheesy, but I love it anyway, during an emergency, you don't rise to the occasion, you fall back and sink to your level of training. Really, once the adrenaline hits and that stress level rises, your brain shuts off, and you're gonna revert back to muscle memory. And the best way to develop that muscle memory is just to continue to do those things you know you're gonna have to do. So those drills, those trainings, things like the Great Washington Shakeout coming up in October, even though in the middle of your day, dropping, covering, and holding on when there's no earthquake, again, seems kind of tacky, but starting to build that muscle memory for simple actions like that, very important.
Many people keep telling themselves they will put together a grab-and-go bag, 2 months of worth of meals ready to eat, and buy a Crank solar emergency radio so they can listen to KPTZ in the event of the big one. Mm-hmm. But they never get around to actually doing it. Any ideas on how to drive home how important these things are?
Yeah, and I totally understand. It's very intimidating when you think about all the things you would need to prepare for 30 days, for 60 days to really be self-sufficient. What I would recommend, a plan where you build your kit and start preparing in increments. So the next time you go to the store, buy one extra food item to throw in your kit. And you go to the grocery store every week, within a month, you have four extra things. And build it over the course of 6 months, a year. It doesn't all have to be at once. Go about it just bit by bit, a bit at a time, and before you know it, a year from now, you're going to have an absolutely well-stocked, ready-to-go emergency kit. Again, it's just so hard to do all at once, and we've talked about the great work these communities are doing. That wasn't done overnight. Many of these communities have been working at this for years, and there have been individuals who have been steadily chipping away bit by bit to get to where they're at today. So my best advice, don't be intimidated. It's a lot easier than you think. On the topic of importance, though, these are activities that, you know, you start chipping away at it. They're little, but they're going to make a huge difference. And the investment you're making, potentially, could be absolutely enormous. And I totally understand that a lot of the work that I do and a lot of the work that these communities are putting in and preparing, in an ideal world, we never actually have to use any of it. But again, it's not a matter of if, but when, and it will happen eventually. Cascadia might not hit in our lifetimes, but it's going to hit at some point. So we have to be prepared. Just know that the investments you're making are important, and they're potentially investments with huge payoffs.
By order of the U.S. Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, the U.S. government finally released formally classified information on flying saucers. They don't use the term flying saucers, of course. The name of the report, and it's a mouthful, is the Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force Preliminary Assessment. The report clearly said that UFOs are real, in the sense that the investigation determined that no earthly government has ever created aircraft that can do what these flying objects have been filmed doing. Port Townsend resident Maureen Morgan, executive director of the Washington State Mutual UFO Network, wrote an analysis of the government's report, so we asked if she would share her thoughts with our listeners.
Okay, well, you are, to date, my only interview regarding the UAP Task Force report. If that's not scary, in the commentary that was in the newsletter, I believe the intention of the UAP Task Force report was basically it was crafted to kill the discussion.
In your most recent newsletter, you write that the U.S. government is either unwilling or unable to get to the bottom of the UFO mystery. And you base that on your analysis of the government's release of its Unidentified Aerial Phenomena Task Force Preliminary Assessment. So what did you see in that report that brought you to that conclusion?
Well, there were so many red flags in that report. First, and these are some things that weren't necessarily put into the commentary that you read, but the original order from Congress was that the Office of the Director of National Intelligence was to coordinate with all relevant agencies to put this task force together. And it turns out it was only largely the Navy. And even though the Air Force basically is the agency that controls the safety of our airspace, they're nowhere to be seen. There were multiple agencies should have been involved in this, and yet it ended up being basically the Navy and only the Navy. And it talks about having access to only 144 reliable reports to investigate, when the fact of the matter is, if you do nothing more than look at leaked incidences that go back to 2004, you know, with the USS Nimitz, the USS Roosevelt, and the USS Russell and Omaha, you're talking about potentially hundreds, if not thousands, of well-documented case just with those four leaked incidences. Mm-hmm. You know, so there are, I mean, this is the tip of the iceberg of limitations, disclaimers they put in the task force report that make no sense. On one sentence, it says that they don't have enough reliable cases to investigate. And then the next sentence they say, but 80 of them were involved the most sophisticated sensor equipment we have in the U.S. arsenal. So, I mean, those should have been 80 cases that never even made it to the 141, which brings a big question into just how ineffective is our sensor equipment.
So is it safe to say that you think the government knows more about UFOs than they are admitting in this report?
Oh, absolutely. You know, because the instances with these unidentified, I don't like to use the word UAP, unidentified aerial phenomena, because that was something that I think was basically manufactured roughly around 2016 to erase a history of UFOs. So it's basically being used for UFO incidents that have occurred since 2004. And what it does, it effectively unwrites or rewrites history, rewriting out 70 years of prior history. You know, there are many, many declassified memos that date back to the 1940s, you know, even with, say, Hanford, you know, where there's a flurry of memos that go back and forth between the commander saying, hey, listen, you know, we got UFOs over Hanford. And this was, you know, 8 months before the bombs were dropped on Japan. And all of this was observed on radar. And there's even one instance where an object was picked up on radar over Hanford. A fighter pilot from the Pasco Naval Air Station was deployed to go and chase it. He, after the war, he documented name, rank, and serial number that what he saw over Hanford was the size of three aircraft carriers side by side. There are so many of these memos that I think when they were written back in the 1940s and 50s, no one back there and ever anticipating their being declassified. I mean, and then, of course, I mean, we have all of the instances over the nuclear facilities in the northern tier where UFOs would shut down, tamper, or even destroying, say, missile equipment. Yes, I would say sum it all up. Yes, the government has known that UFOs have been a factor since the early, it's actually since the Battle of Los Angeles in 1942. And I'll even make a comment about that. The Battle of Los Angeles, which is often just dismissed as, oh, just commercial planes going overhead, General George C. Marshall, who was the head of basically the West Coast security, said after the war, whatever was up there was not from this earth. And when you hear these comments coming over and over and over, yeah, you know, there's a history of tens of thousands of incidences, and the government well knows it.
The government assessment that we're talking about, released in June, reaches some definitive conclusions. One, no evidence exists that these objects were U.S.-derived technology. Two, no evidence exists that these objects came from Russia, China, or any other nation. Three, these objects are real, solid objects that appear to be technological. And four, these objects may present a threat to U.S. security. Now, given those facts, Maureen, what do you think those objects are? What is it that's out there?
Well, you notice that they have another category called other.
Yes.
Well, I suppose, you know, if you're not going to come out and say alien, what are they, like a rogue, out of control, black ops operations that's out of control? I mean, it's, you know, it what other, because it was left undefined, clearly they're eliminating all the obvious possibilities that unless they're lying, it's not American technology. It's not any kind of non-government, U.S. non-governmental technology. And they're pretty much eliminating the Russians and Chinese. So, I mean, like, what's left?
Now, after decades of debunking the UFO issue, why do you think the Department of Defense decided to release this assessment at this time?
Well, I think for one thing, I believe there's a Cold War going on in the government, that there are those elements that are trying to get this information out. And there are those elements that are shutting it down. There have been so many leaked videos and photos that have come out, they've had to deal with. And not only that, but then that emboldened the pilots and other military personnel to come out with their testimony of their encounters with UFOs, close near misses. Even with Kevin Day, who was the senior radar operator on the USS Nimitz, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier, who came out and said that this all ties in with the Tic Tac video. Well, on his radar screen, he was picking up hundreds of UFOs, and there were times when it looked like they looked like snow falling from the sky. So I think it's all damage control. You've got these leaked videos that somebody in there is sending out, and then you now have emboldened personnel who are telling their stories.
So for our listeners' sake, tell us, who is Luis Elizondo and why is he an important figure in the search for truth about UFOs?
Well, first of all, Luis Elizondo was the alleged, and I believe truly was, the director of a congressional-funded deep state quasi-secret program identified in the December 2017 New York Times article called The Glowing Auras and Black Money, the Pentagon's Mysterious UFO Program. That basically, it was the first time the New York Times ever broached the UFO topic. And it was like the big turning point in UFOs even being a topic that could be discussed. And in the article, they introduced Luis Elizondo as the head of a government secret government program called the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, otherwise known as ATIP. And he became involved with an organization called the To the Stars Academy that had a number of very high level former CIA government officials in it. He was coming out and saying, hey, listen, the government knows more than it's talking about. You know, the government has investigated UFOs. The unexplainables involved with these reports that ATIP, the Advanced Aerospace Threat Identification Program, was investigating.
People who reported UFOs or believe them to be alien craft were called crackpots for decades. So do you think that the government's admissions in their analysis, vague though they may be, has changed that at all?
Well, you have to realize that that whole concept of witnesses, like UFO witnesses, or people who have experienced, you know, whether they're pilots, somebody in the military, or somebody who has, you know, visitations in their bedroom, that whole policy of making UFOs a subject of ridicule goes back to the Robertson Report in 1953. One of the suggestions in the Robertson Report to make the whole UFO question to go away is to turn it into ridicule. And in retrospect, going back, you know, 70 years later, it has probably been the single most successful PSYOP operation ever. Because to this day, I have people telling me, you know, or questioning whether I wear a tinfoil hat. It has been part of a PSYOP operation for 70 years. And it's right now I have a feeling that it's flopping back in that direction. You know, there has been so much doubt seeded that people have been given justification for reconsidering whether, you know, there really is something legitimate about it or whether we're all tinfoil hat nuts.
Several high government officials have suggested that UFOs might be alien craft, and President Jimmy Carter himself said he saw one. Your analysis of this report includes a memo from Deputy Secretary of Defense Kathleen Hicks about the government assessment. Can you summarize her comments in that memo for us?
This she submitted to the public the same day that the UAP Task Force report came out. And from the tone of it, to me, it makes it very clear that this person is very peeved. So it's a memorandum that went out to the senior Pentagon leadership, commanders of combatant commands, the defense agencies, and on and on and on regarding UAPs. And it's very terse. It makes it very clear that all departments are to be involved with this, not just the Navy. And she's talking about established synchronized collection reporting analysis of what's going on. You know, for the past 70 years, these objects have been intruding in some of our most sensitive airspaces. They have been tampering or disabling many of our most vital nuclear weapon systems. What this suggests is the government has not been collecting data on this. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, the Pentagon head should have been rolling decades ago. It is inconceivable, you know, that you could have, even on the Nimitz, you could have the radar operator picking up hundreds of these unidentified objects hovering, basically harassing a nuclear aircraft strike group worth probably $100 billion. And they have, it's just like they're free to roam. No one's shooting them down. No one's collecting the data. No one's questioning why they're there. And in the meanwhile, the task force report did not totally eliminate the possibility that they might be Russian or Chinese. Well, if they were Russian or Chinese, why weren't they shot down? Why were they able to intrude with impunity over some of our most sensitive airspaces? It's an absurdity that this data has not been collected. It might very well be, how do you dig it out?
That leads me to a question that just occurred to me. Do you think, Maureen Morgan, in our lifetime, your lifetime, my lifetime, we will finally know whether or not these craft come from other dimensions or other planets?
Let's just leave it as other. They may be from civilizations under the water. They may be ultra-dimensional, interdimensional. We just don't know. When the task force was first due to come out, I was so confident that finally there had been a breakthrough and maybe disclosure that we're not alone, that UFOs are real and ET is here and maybe has been here intervening for millennia. Finally, maybe that would come out in my lifetime. And I am not so sure that this is going to happen in my lifetime. I think right now the forces that are trying to keep this contained may be winning the battle. I am not encouraged. Just leave it at that.
Do you have any information about what percentage of the population, either U.S. or worldwide, believes that UFOs may be of alien origin?
Well, I don't know any specific percentages. Alien, it depends on, again, how you define alien. Many of these UFOs are seen going in or out of the water. Are there bases under the water? You know, I think for the most part, no matter what the American people believe, it's based on a lot of misinformation, you know, that's been planted through movies, through talk shows, you know, and I don't, no matter how many Americans believe, you know, that UFOs are real, what do they even believe and what's the basis of those beliefs? It's most likely 99% based on misinformation or disinformation.
If our listeners are interested in this subject and want to know more about the Washington Mutual UFO Network, what can they do?
They can contact the Mutual UFO Network, and I am the state director, which means all the cases that are reported in Washington State passes over my desk. So believe me, I see some really good stuff. You know, if they want more information, particularly about Washington MUFON, they can contact me directly at MUFON, MUFON .investigates@gmail.com. You know, if they want to share a story, you know, if they were in the military and have something they'd like to disclose in confidentiality, if they'd like to be on our mailing list for events that are coming up, we have been doing a monthly Zoom meeting. We were doing, before COVID, we were doing meetings, on-site meetings all over the state. And I even have, as David probably knows, a monthly meeting here in Port Townsend until it all got closed down with COVID. So if they would like to be on our mailing list to receive the current newsletter, which goes into an in-depth analysis of the UAP task force, probably more than they ever want to know, get past ones, or to find out what's, how they can get involved, you know, send me an email, mufon.investigates@gmail.com. And Maureen Morgan, M-A-U-R-E-N-E. Also, I put on information every day on my personal Facebook site. And I probably listen, check into a half a dozen different YouTube videos, presentations, speech, I try to share what I consider to be the very best information out there on my personal Facebook site. So just go to Maureen, M-A-U-R-E-N-E, Morgan, my Facebook site, and there's just a plethora of good stuff there. I feel like by putting it on my personal site, I can put stuff in there that may not be the approval of, MUFON headquarters. So that allows me to put on information I feel that's important that may reflect my point of view.
Since it's been a long while since we've had you on at KPTZ, Maureen, and you mentioned that you are the investigator, you investigate sightings or reports here in Washington State. Is there any event or any investigation you have done in, I don't know, the last year or two or three that stands out in your mind as being very interesting?
I have to keep this as anonymous as possible. We recently had a case that I investigated from a member of a tribal nation here in Washington State, who had an experience, and again, this goes back almost 15 years ago, and it took them that long to basically build up the courage. In a lot of ways, the whole UAP task force phenomena has brought MUFON and ufology into a level of respectability that people who were holding back for years now feel safe to come out, contact us, so that we can investigate incidents that have happened to them that they're hoping to have explained. This may be the only Native American we've ever had report an incident to Washington MUFON who had what was clearly a close encounter, some kind of object coming overhead while he was out working in an outdoor area. And that he experienced like his whole body zapping and, you know, his hair on end, and then suddenly getting what was he interpreted as like piano keys going bzz, 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 through his head. Bzz, 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 bzz. You know, he had no background in music whatsoever, but there was no other way that he could interpret what he was getting in his mind. It was like he was getting a download. And it wasn't until just recently when somebody suggested to him that this might be binary code that he was receiving. And it suddenly made sense. And this apparently went on for some time. Bzz, 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 binary code, like he was being downloaded with something. This incident changed completely changed his life from somebody who was just happy-go-lucky to somebody who became obsessed with reading up everything on economics, on social policy, on science, on quantum physics. And he says that, you know, he's basically become completely alienated from his own people and family because he's gone into this direction that they're finding totally inexplicable. And then I have an ongoing conversation with this person. And it's like, this is highly, highly, highly credible. Somebody who I've met with and talked for 3 hours face to face. That to me is probably the single most compelling case that we have had. And in many ways justifies MUFON, because without MUFON, without me, without our Washington MUFON team, these people have nowhere to go.
With Maureen Morgan, Executive Director of the Washington State Mutual UFO Network, this is David Cunningham for the KPTZ News Team. The Compass airs Saturdays at noon, with repeat airings Mondays at noon and 5 p.m., exclusively here on KPTZ 91.9 FM in Port Townsend.